Welcome to the Never Horror Podcast, where we sit stiff and talk horror shit. I am Joey, and this is Leo.
Apparently.
Hey! We are continuing our October 3rd third-a-thon. I don't know what you want to call it, but we're going over the iconic franchise's third movie. As we've noticed, and as you noticed throughout this process, the third movie in a franchise has a lot of interesting elements to it that either defined a series or it can ruin a series, as we may find out really soon. All right. Now, as we usually do on this program, what are we sipping on today, Mr. Leo? I will start with you.
I'm going to be drinking a Fourth Tap Brewing Co-op Backcountry Cold Brew Coffee Stout. I like the little kick.
Yeah. It's Backcountry? Oh, like that song. Like,
yeah, by that one group that sold out. Not an amazing drummer, though.
I wouldn't say that they sold out. I think they just got, you know.
They bought in.
Yeah, they bought in.
It's good. I wish it was more thick. It's good though. I give it. It gets my 3 skulls out of 5.
Mm-hmm. All right, and as for me, it's been weird, y'all. You know what? It's been a weird time. It's been strange.
Hey, this fool's not drinking, I swear to God.
I'm not. But, like, it's weird. Like, I didn't even crave any. You know what? It's almost been a week since I last had anything to drink. Yeah, it's weird. It was Sunday. And we played on Saturday. So, yeah, that was one of my last few times. Was the last recording when we did that other movie, Leatherface. Yeah, weird. I don't know, like what it is. I'm not calling it quits, y'all. So don't give up on me, you know. But
I gave up on your mask, though. I think last time you told me you were like at a 90%. Was it like you didn't drink 4 times out of 100 episodes? You were at 80% not drinking.
Yeah, like I don't know. But yeah, so that's what's going on. I don't know. Kind of like, I was like, should I say? I'm like, I don't really feel like it. I'm not really feeling it. You know. If you're listening to this episode, you're like, okay, then that means Joey's going to be back for the next episode. That is incorrect, because we are recording this and the next episode back to back. So next episode, I will also be sober. So 2 episodes after that, maybe. We'll see.
Who knows? Oh, no. Who knows? You taking your ass to the store. That's what you're going to do.
But what was I saying? Oh, well, side note, not good for my teams today. We got the Astros lost pretty badly today in game 2, but it's just game 2. I didn't expect them to sweep out the Red Sox.
That's going to game 7.
I'm saying game 6. Astros win it. Game 6. And then the Avalanche, last I saw, they were losing 3-1 against the St. Louis Blues. So, but yeah, we are talking about the one, the only, like the movie.
So,
if you've seen any of our videos There's always the Hellraiser 3 poster behind me, so we are finally talking about that particular movie. As you can guess, I do like this movie, so that's not going to be a surprise for you. This is a very interesting film on a lot of levels, and that's why I knew this movie had to have an interesting background. And I spent a good, like 2+ hours looking at interviews, reading stuff, just about this film and how it came to be. Where to begin, as they would say?
Fuck Weinstein.
Well, yeah, but...
No, he ruined the franchise. Fuck Weinstein.
He also did, like, other things, but, you know.
What else did he ruin that was good? That was good. Huh?
But, what, like, at a certain time, Weinstein's movie productions, I think he had pretty good movies he put out there. He wasn't the best guy, just say that. So this is the first Hellraiser film that was filmed in the U.S. And it was filmed in Greensboro, North Carolina, and not New York City. There was some post-production stuff shot in Los Angeles, and the post-production stuff there, that's when a lot of the kind of vagueness happened of, like, who did what, who suggested this. Basically, at one time, it's like Clive Barker. Let's kind of start it off here. So after Hellraiser 2 came out, Hellbound, which everyone says the first two are their favorite generally. I have always been that outlier kind of like person that says that the second one's one of the worst ones. I just don't care for the second one at all. It's really boring. I've seen it a handful of times just trying to get into it. But it fits with the first one in tone better than how the third one is just nothing like. Well, the third one's almost like nothing like any other Hellraiser movie.
There's the fourth one.
I guess the fourth one's close to saying too, but it's still not as wild as this movie gets.
Not to be thrown off movie subjects, but the fourth one's the origin story of the box, right?
Yeah.
And the fifth one's one in space?
No, the fourth one's also space. Like basically, he follows the Munchak family line, like, through generations. And, like, the last one, the third generation guy is in space. So, one is the Pinhead in space movie. So, it's only about, like, 20 minutes worth of space part of it or something like that. Most chunk of it is taking place in, like, the 90s. But people don't talk about that.
The 1800s.
Like, after Hellraiser 2 came out, again, it was a big success. They were set to do a part 3, and they were going to do it with, like, again, keeping Julia, the main villain in, like, the first two films, reprise her role and, you know, this character. She was originally supposed to be the main antagonist to this entire series. It wasn't supposed to be Pinhead. Pinhead was just a side guy, you know. There was no, like guarantee that, like, Doug Bradley was going to stick with the series. It's just that the fans kind of gravitated towards Pinhead. They're like, we like that guy, you know. And, like, So like one.
Well, I mean, every time he had the frames, it was him right there.
Oh yeah, like that's on them. Like Julia, the actress, her name. She basically declined to do a part three anyway. Like Clive and his team. Okay, we gotta think of something new. I guess we'll have a kid to do this. But while that was happening, Clive Barker releases Nightbreed, which Fox
bombed.
Fox like were the distributors of that movie, but like the film, Clive says it was marketed incorrectly, and that's why the film bombed. And that made Clive Barker's film company, New World Pictures, go into bankruptcy. And that halted Hellraiser 3.
Yeah, but then like the other company was the New Order, New World.
New World, yeah. That was
didn't they go bankrupt because of that too?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I said, yeah. Clive's company went like bankrupt. Like basically you had this property, Hellraiser, with like nobody older anymore. So it just kinda like it was kinda like not like a bidding war, but there were definitely some interest in doing a Hellraiser 3. So they eventually somebody bought the rights. Miramax bought the distribution rights. I can't say anything.
Distribution?
Right. Yeah.
See, you need some beer.
But so anyway, the company brought the series to the U.S. And their whole plan was that we're going to make this, I guess, more mainstream U.S., you know, because, like, the first two films, I mean, they have a certain look that's a bit kind of drab, very U.K., British looking. You know, like how British TV and British movies look? They have that look. But for the third one, huh?
Cheap?
Yeah. Because, like, even, like, the new British stuff, it still looks kind of cheap. I don't know what it is. But they don't put, like, near as much money as the U.S. does in cinematography and stuff like that. Anyway. Like, yeah, that was their whole plan. And then at one time, okay, so there's a few different crossing stories there from like what I read and like what I heard from like interviews about what went down next. So they had hired Anthony Hitchcock, I think that's how you say it. Hitchcock. Yeah. Weird say it. But anyway. They had hired him to like direct the movie. Clive Barker instantly was, no, this guy cannot direct this movie. It's either this horror comedy, which is true. That's what he was known for, and that's still what he's known for.
Was that like Waxwork 2 that he had just finished?
Yeah. Yeah, that was like his most recent film. And that's what got him the role. Like the job. And Clive was all like, no, we can't have this guy direct a serious horror movie. Have me spoke to Clive, and Clive was like, okay, I guess I can trust you, but just don't screw it up. You know, Clive was right, but you know. But anyway, so they got Peter Atkins to write this movie. So I think he did the second one also. And I think he did the fourth one also. Because I know he's like into like the first like I think four Hellraiser movies. I think he either produced them or like wrote them. They also had like like a writing credit or story credit to Hellraiser 2's director, Tony Randall. The team script was also okay, so like here's the thing with this, like it was at one time after the script was like written, Clive Barker said that he wanted nothing to do with this film, take his name off. Then another story says that the company paid Clive Barker not to have his name or like not to have anything to do with this movie. Like they paid him to like step back. So I don't know which is true, but basically Clive Barker had nothing to do with the developing of this movie, basically. Now, after the movie was filmed and shot, this is another kind of like crossing stories there. Clive Barker and Weinstein saw this movie and they were not satisfied. Oh, okay. Four one now. But yeah, so like Clive and Harvey were not satisfied for like different reasons. So they weren't satisfied. Like Olsen basically did a few reshoots, they added a few things at Los Angeles. Now people basically take it as like the more kind of darker things were Clive adding to the movie. The more kind of silly, crazy, action-y parts were done by Weinstein. But there's apparently nobody really knows, which is weird. It's like, okay, the movie's like been out forever. Why does no one actually have the official answer? Who knows? But yeah, that's a little bit of the background to this movie before it comes out. You know, this movie, what is it, 93 or 92?
92, I think.
Yeah, so, yep. So basically, because of like Clive's involvement at the end, he put his name back on the executive producing, and that's why it always says Clive Barker presents. Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth. He was satisfied enough with this movie. But I'm sure when he first saw this, he was like, what the fuck is this? What happened to my movie? They were trying to go for almost a Freddy Krueger element in this one. I don't know if you felt the same way.
I felt like they had fucked up the continuity already right off the bat. Because it's kind of like the Michael Myers thing on the part two. You can't get deader than dead. And Pinhead was killed in the second one. And he was deader than dead. How do they call it? It was sequel proof. His death, apparently. So they called it. And what? He just magically appears in a like statue ornament containment thingy.
But I'm pretty sure that Clive was not planning to have Pinhead back for the third one, but
from what I know is that they actually had an issue with Pinhead being on the original cover, like the original movie poster for it. They didn't want to go with whatever Miramax had produced, but then they went with like some images from the old one. It's the one you got behind you. But they were still saying the MPAA, whatever, they were saying that the image was, no, it's still not right, blah, 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 it's not good. So in the defense, Miramax said, well, you let us get away with it before. What's so different now?
Yeah.
So the MPAA actually gave in to the poster you have behind you. It figured, like, since Pinhead was the one that everybody, you know, was all about, that's the one they wanted to go with. Because if you notice, I mean, of course you notice, none of the originals come out. Just Pinhead.
Yeah. And I know, like, the female Cenobite didn't want to, like, come back. I think guy that played Butterbean, he was willing to, like, come back, but, like, nobody called him. They just got Pinhead. Like, yeah, we see Pinhead. We'll make a new Cenobite robot. And we'll talk about some of the Cenobites later. There are some wacky ones. So I guess let's dive into the movie a little bit. Basically, we start with this. We meet this girl. No, the first thing we see is the good old Hermit. He's back. He's played by, I think, one of the producers or one of the. I think he was a producer. I think the last in the series that we see this Hermit fella, or I think he shows up in like one of the recent films.
I'll be honest, I've seen the first one, the second, and the third. The fourth one, I've only seen it once. And I didn't see nothing after that. Oh, I saw Judgment.
I've seen all of them. I've only seen one time was Judgment. The rest, I have at least seen twice. I like myself the Pinheads, you know? Hellraiser. Yeah, so I think this is the last one he shows up until, like, Revelations, like. I think he's in that one. But yeah, because like he was kind of like the carrier, the garter, like the guardian of the box. I don't know what he exactly was, but like he's at this art museum with this, with like one of our main antagonists in this movie, J.P. Monroe. He's a really big douchebag. It's like the actor does a great job. You like wonder if like the actual actor is a big beast actor. He plays this role really well. He sells you a statue, and that statue, as like Leo mentioned earlier, that's kinetic. I don't remember exactly how the second one ends, but. So they kind of explain it that the demon that from like the human Spencer Elliot or Elliot Spencer in the second one, and yeah, now he's causing chaos. He has a human form, just a demon now. Yeah, so like JP buys this, and we find out some stuff about that. Anyway, so like, yeah, the statue is a very vital part to this story. After that, we meet our main protagonist, Joey, aka. Joanna, I think this is our first Joey that we've ever talked about. So, kudos to her having a really good name. What's that?
But she's god awful in this movie.
What do you mean? Wait, you mean the acting or like the character? Or both?
She's a horrible anchor, I'll tell you that much.
Wait.
you're going to be in an emergency room, and when an emergency hits, you're going to be all surprised. Who the fuck? You're in an emergency room. What the hell do you think is going to happen?
Well, yeah, because like, yeah, she is a kind of a up-and-coming, struggling news reporter. She gets all like the crappy pieces. And yeah, they sent her to some ER that apparently they didn't have a story. But it was shortly after this. So like, this is where like I got the Freddy Krueger vibe from. When like in that ER scene, when like that gurney comes crashing through and the teeth are like all like there, like the doctors are like rushing by. It seemed like a nightmare scene. It almost reminded me of like Nightmare 5 when they're rushing what's her face to like deliver her baby. I don't know if you remember that too well. It just kind of had that like quick shots with like these weird angles. And then
it had early 90s written all over it.
And that's what I wanted to say too. Like, I actually love the way that this movie looks because it has that early 90s kind of this weird cinematography. Yeah.
Sometimes I don't understand. Like, whenever you have like the hallways like that, you have like the dark corridors and the lights seem to be not positioned in the right area. They look like they're always pointing sideways and the camera's always coming in at an angle, like doing the whole, like, it circles into it. It's like, yo, chill. Like, you're lucky I'm not drunk and nauseous looking at this shit.
Yeah, like, I just loved it. I was like, this is, look-wise, again, I'm just talking about look. The look of this film, visually, this is my favorite Hellraiser movie. Look-wise, cinematography-wise, this is my favorite.
That reminds me. Well, you got Freddy from it. I got The Crow.
I can see that.
Of course, not outside, because if The Crow, it's always fucking raining. But like the inside shots of the like the long corridors and all that stuff.
I like love that. It was like really nice.
And then the clubs, all the clubs always look the same. Look like everybody wanted to have an artsy club with a metal band playing in it, aka like Ace Ventura.
This club had a Saint Armor playing. I don't know them really, right? You know. I know that they're a band. But yeah. Oh, speaking of like the music. A lot of people have had a problem with this movie actually being heavy on music, and they felt, again, like this is definitely the quote unquote MTV movie of the series. Like all these big franchises, Professor Chucky had a, well, I guess Friday Chucky is kind of, but it all has this like MTV movie that was very, it looks like a music video. The entire time, and it has a pretty big soundtrack. This movie was headlined by Motorhead. Head song, Hellraiser, which is a song that Lemmy originally wrote for Ozzy. And I, because like I knew the Motorhead version first, I thought Ozzy covered Motorhead, and then I found out, oh no, the Ozzy song came out first.
It's kind of like the whole Didi Ramone writing Chinese rock, but actually some other band did it, and then when his band did it, it was the actual cover.
Yeah. That's always kind of weird. It's like, I don't know if it's lazy on them to do that. It's like, well, I have a song, Hellraiser, I wrote for Ozzy.
I don't blame him.
I mean, it does.
I mean, you wrote it. It's technically your song.
Yeah, it does fit. Music video directed by Clive Barker. Because I think Pinhead and Lemmy are playing chess in it. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I know it's kind of a goofy video.
I've never seen the video. I just learned how to play the song on the bass, and that was it.
It was a good song.
It's not a hard song to play. It's just chords.
I overall like the Motorhead version better than the Ozzy version. Though the Ozzy version clearly has a better guitar on it. It's Zakk Wylde. But anyway, as we were, after this first kill scene with all the chain getting all electrocuted and the guy exploding, and you have this one girl, we find out name is Terry, runs away. Who knows that she has a story to make her a top anchor. She's gonna follow that lead. She finds out again. Another thing that made me think Freddy. Of that, Terry goes to, it's called the Boiler Room, which is owned by J.P. Monroe. Man, I read something about why they call it the Boiler Room.
Isn't that what they call it, the Boiler Room?
Yeah. That's the clip thing. A little side note, which I should have said it earlier, but I forgot to mention. This movie was in rush production and it was 6 weeks long.
6 weeks.
And a lot. Yeah, 6 weeks. But everyone says, still to this day in recent interviews with some of the cast and crew, that they had a great time. It was long hours. And Doug Bradley, he had a fun time, but he says that this is the most uncomfortable makeup he's ever been doing in it.
Well, yeah, I mean, they changed the whole thing, so they made it easy for him to actually get into the makeup.
Yeah.
It's easier to apply, but this time they had the little stubs kind of poking through, so it would actually push against his scalp. Now the one bright side about it is he actually got one of those eye doctors to get him prescribe contacts for the black eyes he had.
Yeah.
So he said that was better than what he had before.
Other invites, I also heard that they were done pretty cheaply too. Well, not cheaply, but really quick kind of, quick and pace.
I mean, Atkins was one of them.
Oh, yeah. And
his wife on the set.
I was just about to say that, yeah. Yeah, which is pretty cool. Random. And change just fell over. You're a ghost. Anyway.
Were you playing with a box earlier? A puzzle box?
Joey goes down to the old Boiler Room. She meets JP, one of the of course, this is when you really get to see that he's kind of a douchebag. He's the owner of the club, and he has no interest in talking to her. He hands her a rose. A rose he gives the girl that he wants to think of. And then Terry sees her there, and Terry's like, hey, I guess I'll talk to you. But she like calls her up later on the phone because like Joey like leaves her car like everywhere. Okay, girl, let me talk to you. So Terry's like, hey, I'll like talk to you. But as long as I can crash over your place. They're always like, that's fine. That's cool. You know? Now, one thing I did not know, the actress that plays Terry, I forgot her name right now, I didn't realize how big of a kind of a success that she had after this movie. So I was kind of thinking, okay, this is it. It's for her. Like, that has to be cool. Movies, but yeah, she's been in a lot of things. Just, like, if you look at her IMDb, she's the only cast member that this is not in her like known for top four. The rest of them, this is like either number one or like number two. For her, it's not even in the top four. Like,
was she in any other horror films?
She only did, I think, one other horror movie. She was on like a kind of a popular TV series. It was a series that I didn't watch. I forget what it was now, but Paula Marshall. Apparently, yeah. She dyed her hair black for this movie, and thought it was weird to have black hair, but it worked. She has a cool look in this movie. I think she like played the character pretty well. She might be the best actress. I guess she clearly is the best actress in this movie because, but.
I mean, they were saying that due to the fact that everybody was doing these long hours since it was a rush film, like nobody really ever can get into that character, into that scene, you know?
Yeah.
So it's... If you watch this movie and you watch the acting, it's not the best acting in this film. It's a high budget film, but not well acted. It's due to the fact that it's something that, yeah, they gave a shit ton of money to make it, but they also didn't give them the time in the world to make it.
Oh, yeah. I do want to mention the worst acting in this movie. This person's coming up really soon. And you know what? Let me just get to it. I mean, basically, okay, it's like back in the boiler room, JP spots this blonde girl. Her name is not said in this movie, but she apparently has a character name. It's like Chrissy or something like that, or Stacy, whatever it is. So I had to like look up this like actress. Like, anyway.
Oh, like, the chick that didn't want her tits shown?
Yeah, Amy Lee, you know, not so like Amy Lee, the Evanescence singer. But anyway, that girl, even though I gotta respect her that she didn't want like her like titties being shown, she is one of the worst actresses I have ever seen. She makes porn stars like Oscar winners too. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
He's like, oh, wow, you got some cool stuff here.
I was going to say she has the worst negotiation skills. She doesn't want to show her tits, but she would rather let someone touch them.
That is true, yeah. Yeah, because, like, not show her titties, The actor that played JP, like, had to have his hand like the entire time. That's why that's one of the reasons why their sex scene is so awkward, because of like his hands are just not moving until he finally comes and like he does this whole like Jesus Christ pose, which is silly. But anyway, so like that girl is Pinhead's first actual victim that we see. And he does the whole like being alive type of thing, and he kind of sucks her into the statue. JP's all freaked out. He's like, "Oh my god, what is this?" But no, he says, "Jesus Christ." And then Pinhead says, "Not quite," which I thought was kind of cool. Kind of cheesy.
Yeah, Pinhead got some one-liners in this film.
Yep. This is another Freddy type thing comparison.
I mean, at that point, it's a Freddy, it's a Chucky. Like, it seems like all the 90s built, like, that would talk would get one-liners. Because Jason, of course, Michael didn't get one-liners, but they didn't. There's no peep out of those fools. Besides,
there's been a few like throughout the series. like JP is like first freaking out, but then Pinhead basically convinces him, "Hey, help me out, and I can help you out. You'll be like my right hand man as take over this world. You and me, buddy, let's do this because we're both the same. You know, basically, you have your pleasures, I have mine, and we both work together to get our pleasures going. We're in the pleasure business, buddy." This kind of doesn't work out really, depending on how you look at it. But anyway, so, so here's are you saying six? Wait.
No, they overturned the goal.
Dang. All right.
They had to open it and everything.
All right. This is the one thing that even if you like hear like interviews, there are still some people who think this makes no sense. And even I, as a fan of this movie, it's a little like it makes no sense, but whatever. So Elliot Spencer, the form like the human version of the Pinhead, or the whatever, the used to be human version of Pinhead, he starts communicating to like Joey. Not in dreams exactly, but in this weird limbo land, and it vaguely explains why he's able to do this and why he's going after Joey. And it's basically because, okay, so Joey's father was killed or missing after, I think it was Vietnam, which seems a little too old, even for like 93.
No.
But, maybe not.
Vietnam, wasn't it like late 60s or early 70s?
Yeah, like maybe, yeah, because like he didn't like know her dad. So like, yeah, so maybe that doesn't work out. But anyway, because like they were both in the war, and they were both in a war, they had this connection. it doesn't really work. That was storyline wise, it was just kind of like, I think they could have thought of a better way to make sense. This is just like, oh, well, let's make sure my dad was in Vietnam and he died. So thus, every war person are connected in the land of
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, like I don't like this movie. Like, I like the beginning. Everything in the middle sucks until we get to that club scene where everybody gets murdered.
I actually like a bunch of the stuff. I do like the Spencer background story. If you get to know a bit more about the man who became Pinhead. Kind of cool.
But how the whole... there's a way you could have done that, but they shoved too much into one movie.
I think they just could have executed it a little bit better.
I just think it was too much information to take in at once, which at this point I'm like, yo, it's taking forever to get to the next murder here. Move it along.
Hellraiser movies aren't like, you know, the biggest body.
Well, that's the thing about Hellraiser movies. I honestly don't think that they're for everybody.
They're not.
They're the kind of movies where... what kind of movie you like? I like slashers. Okay, do you like slashers because you also like a backstory? Or do you like a well-written story? Or do you like... because I think that's the thing about one. One was well-written. Two felt forced. And three, it's a convoluted mess. But it's one of those convoluted mess that works.
Really does. It's like, this movie still has a lot of haters on it. It's so to the face.
It's like the scenes that are meant to be loved are so beloved. But there's just like, for me, that whole concept of it's a lot of stuff that I just could do without.
Yeah, because like this movie is a big reason why, like, one of the reasons why like part four bombed at the box office, because of the reputation and reaction to the third one, people were just like, why would I see the fourth movie? And then I hear it's in space. No, thank you. I'm not going
to
see that.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what the 90s did. The 90s would send off their killers into space to kill, like, to finish off their series. Yeah. So that's an old boy Leprechaun.
But anyway, so I even though the acting kind of like kind of a mixed bag, I also like these characters. I like the characters overall. I like Joey, Terry, Doc, JP, and of course Pinhead. But then yeah, let's get to, because like basically,
let me ask you this: what did you like about these characters?
I think they work really well.
No, what is it about every character individually you liked?
All right. Guess we'll start with the main one, with Joey, for one. Mm-hmm.
And don't say it just because her name was Joey.
that's one reason. But I like that, you know, she was kind of like Well, that's kind of weird about it, but like she was a strong female lead, especially, you know, because she wasn't like that, like the final girl type. She wasn't like a teenager. She was whatever, like 30 or so, or whatever, 25. And she was like trying to get, like, get ahead without, you know, sexualizing like stuff. And the fact that she was cool with like going head, and she didn't really, you know, kind of like run away from him first day, even though she kind of technically did, but still she kind of like beat him, blah blah blah, you know.
Well, I mean, Pinhead had to keep her alive because he couldn't just grab the box. He needed to be given the box.
Well, yeah, but still.
And she knew that because she was told by what's his face's counterpart.
Yeah, but still,
with that information, I would have gone Pacquiao on his ass.
That's not like, you know, Terry was a character. I like the way that every scene she always seems so nervous. Because like her character never had anybody. She's been like on her own, like by herself. The style. I think she did a good job on that. And I already said, JP, you did just a great douchebag. He was so good. Ended up being that like character. And like Doc was a good side character. Still warm, still caring. You want to see Joey succeed. He would help her out anymore. And he did. So it was a dying day. Of course, Pinhead. He's the main character. I guess you can say Spencer too. Spencer's okay. But yeah, it's like, yeah, so as I was saying, Joey's having these visions, and he's like, no, this is for that. I forgot this one, the biggest part in this movie. I was about to skip that biggest part, and this is not the best part in this movie. I want to, well, maybe not the best part. So Terry, who is sleeping over Joey's place, he hears a voicemail from Doc, basically, hey, congratulations, you got that anchor job in like Monterey or wherever it was, some in place, Montana, I forgot, doesn't matter. She freaks out, she feels betrayed, she feels that Joey lied to her, and she goes back to, you know, JP, because like JP called her a few minutes prior to that, asking her to like come back. It was like JP wants to get her there so that he can feed her to like Pinhead. That's his plan. It doesn't really work out that well.
Now I'm like, I don't think it's starting to sound like Freddy Krueger. It's starting to sound like that one movie, the guy feeding people to that plant, Pet Shop of Horrors.
I think it kind of is. Yeah, it's like Terry gets to JP's place. He's like trying to apologize to her. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, babe. You know, and you need like a good couple. And she's like, oh no, JP, you're like really mean to me. And like he tries to kind of shove it. What does she do? She like punches him or something like that? Oh no, she has like some brass knuckles and like knocks him out.
By the way, that was the weakest wind up I've ever seen in my life. Like, she didn't even do this. It's like
I mean,
still, it's like I would think if you're gonna suffer a good hit, you need a wind up. with the release, you know, shoulders. Throw the shoulder in, you know. But this girl just went like, girl went, huh, huh. You see what I'm, see my arm movement here, guy? It's like, huh, huh. It's like, so like those robots, and sock and bop on robots.
Maybe that's like all the fighting experience. It was like rocking, sucking. But yes, as she's like running at the door, that's when like Pinhead, who's still stuck in the statue, like, hey man, let me help you out. And she has this whole thing where like she can't dream, and then Pinhead's like, if you want to dream, I can help you out. You just have to let me feast on JP. So he agrees to it. He feeds him JP. And not exactly sure why, but when like he gets JP's blood or whatever body, his soul, this somehow breaks Pinhead free of the statue. Now, unless I've missed something, but like I said, I've seen this movie a handful of times. I've never heard a reason why this is the, you know, the reason why he's free. I don't think they even see.
Maybe because he got a man and a woman?
Maybe so. Again?
Adam and Eve?
Like it, convoluted, makes no sense.
It just seems like they were like, oh man, this movie's like over halfway and Pinhead's still stuck in that statue. We gotta get him out.
Look, you know what? This is what this movie feels like to me. It's like whenever you and your drunk uncles are having a conversation, but you guys never finish a topic. You guys are just drunk talking about something. And then you're just sitting there, and then you move on to the next conversation without even giving an ending to that one conversation with him. That's how this movie feels like. It leaves all stones turned.
Yeah, there's a good chunk that is not explained. So like, now you have Pinhead free as a bird. Oh, you know what it is? I actually forgot. He doesn't actually kill what we. He does kill JP, but he turns him into a Cenobite. So maybe that is the reason. But then again, whatever. So like,
I mean, he turns her into a Cenobite too.
What's that?
He turns her into a Cenobite too.
Oh yeah, yeah, but we don't see her like being turned into one. We like kind of see him turn into one.
I mean, it looked like he murdered them more than anything.
Oh yeah, but he like he first has to kill them, then he like however he kills them.
I mean, I guess that was the twist to the story. She got turned into a Cenobite. Like yep. The twist, okay. The Judas.
Oh, speaking of, the actress who played Terry. Hates smoking, and this character smokes throughout this entire film, like everything that's supposed to be doing. Let's put up with it. Yes, like Pinhead unleashed onto the actual world, that's hell on Earth, and does this boy bring it when he goes into the main club? The club is full of people. A little factoid, most of these club scenes, this like whole death scene, it was filmed on a Monday. I saw like a very old Connecticut news report about the filming this a movie. Like someone uploaded it and they were like, we're looking for extras. It's like come by I must be guys dressed like this, girls dressed like this, you're in.
I guess.
Like, this is something that's never happened in any prior film, like really after. And this is why this is the by far, this has to be the highest kill count in any Hellraiser film. The Pinhead stunted kills about 300 plus people in this club scene. He just goes berserk. There's all kinds of crazy mayhem going on. Like a few of them become Cenobites. Well, basically just two of these people become Cenobites in this scene. One of them is one of the most talked about Cenobites in all of Cenobite history. It's a DJ. He has CD spinning on top, over his head, and the CD, you know, stab his brain, and he becomes Cenobite known as CD. He's one of my favorites because he is so ridiculous. So like, this was something that like Anthony apparently thought of. Making this CD Cenobite. He was not in the original script. He was not anywhere to be found, like any story, like anything. He's a goofy looking Cenobite. It's a goofy concept that CD also is like weapon is CD, and he throws him at you like a frisbee, or like a whatever, like a ninja star. That's a better example than a frisbee, because a frisbee is whatever. And then the bartender, played by, as we said, Peter Atkins, or like the writer, he becomes the Cenobite most known as Barbie, as in like barbed wire, because he's filled with barbed wire, and his specialty is he can make the cocktail. What do you think about this big mass murder scene?
Oh, I liked it.
I did like it.
I can see why, because it felt like to me like a lot of the video games, like Dead Space and all that. Like, I can see a lot of that coming from this kind of movie. Like, of course, Dead Space has to do with like intergalactic fucking mutated zombie demon things or whatever.
Yeah.
But you can see like a lot of like the bodies hanging, and it kind of gives off that kind of vibe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can see where like a lot of movies get that. Or TV shows, I mean, not TV shows, video games get that from. To me, that felt more like a whole video game scene than an actual movie scene.
Yeah.
The extra Cenobites, they were okay, I guess. Like, the more we talk about this film, the more I'm just realizing that I like this movie due to nostalgia reasons. I mean, I watched it yesterday and today, and I think that's the part that hurt it, because how do I explain it? It's pretty much what I said. Now that I'm like sitting there paying attention 100%, I feel like this is unnecessary. This was unnecessary.
Out of all the series, it is the most bonkers Hellraiser movie.
I mean, it is. But I might have just needed to be in the right state of mind to watch it, I guess. That could be one. Because it's like sometimes I'm like I can watch a Freddy movie any time of the day, any time of the week. I can watch a Jason Michael movies any time of the week. I can watch Chucky, every day on the hour. But it just seems like Hellraiser is the one I just can't watch on command.
I think most of the series, yes. But for me, this one, the third one, I can watch on command anytime because it's just so out there.
Yeah, I love out there movies, but this is out there for stuff that I care not about. Like, the out there I want to see is, like, I want to see, like, some trauma type shit. Like, death scenes and shit, you know what I mean? If I'm watching, like, honestly, if I were to remake the third film, I would use all the convoluted shit and literally make a trilogy out of it. And I feel like that could work a lot better than trying to show. I think that's my biggest issue with this, is trying to, like, the first two had a well-written story that paced itself good. This one, it's just because of all this meshing up, unfinished business. And then the thing that sucks is, and what hurts it, I feel, is that you don't really get to get more of it in the next sequels.
Yeah.
So everything is left.
Well, I think also that's the problem with like any movie that is built this way, basically having like an original story and like another guy who rewrites it, but he adds his own thing to it, and the director adds his own thing to it. Once it's completely done, the producers come in and you say, hey, we need to like reshoot some scenes and like add in this to it. It's a vision of like multi people together. It's just too many hands in the cookie jar.
Yeah. That's what hurt it. And that's why I said, like, I love this movie. Like, I love the first scene. I love how it starts off, the hallway. Fucking a dude being torn apart by chains. I'm like, I'm going in for a fucking ride. And then that ride turns into a detective story that's not so detective-like. It is a story of a homeless girl trying to find her place, but not trusting the world. And then she's still fucked in the end. And then you have the story of the guy making a deal with the devil, and then you only show one scene, then you get betrayed right away. And then you get a story, a side story of a deadbeat reporter. While all that is going on, there's a club playing some metal music. And then you have a massacre. And then you have an empty-ass New York City. Because it was not New York City.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. New York City is like that empty. Which I wrote down, too. Like I said, there's no way. There's like nobody on these streets.
I mean, seriously, how the fuck you call that New York and ain't not a goddamn soul in that bitch? It's the fucking crowded city in the fucking America. Shit, downtown Houston looks more fucking crowded than that place did. And it always comes down to one of my favorite scenes, why I love this movie, and it's the church scene.
Oh yeah, that's my favorite scene in this movie. And apparently, like some of the locals and also the like crew had an issue with this scene, with them actually doing it at a church, all this, but the director, what did he say? He had convinced him based on like the Hammer film.
Christopher Lee running around the church.
So they said, okay, if cool with hammering and a crystal leaf, go for it, man. This is pretty cool
technique. Hey, but that's actually the best thing, like using a reference like that. I mean, I would have never even thought of that. It's like, yo, that's how you get people to do, like, work on some good shit. You know what I mean?
Like, this like, church scene, besides, like, some of the, whatever, early CGI moments, it's, like, from start to finish, I love the scene. And, like, Joey runs in there after, you know, chaotic outside with a empty New York City with cars exploding. He like turns in this church. He's all like, you know, like a little like a preacher, whatever he is, father figure. It's like Catholic type church. Like, help me, you know.
He came off pretty pervy.
I mean, she came on. Pervy. What do you mean?
Wait, like, he was like all grabbing her and he had like this. I'm like, yo, what the fuck are you gonna do, right? it looked bad. It was probably bad acting.
Yeah.
Because after that, fucking Pinhead makes his grand entrance to that church. And this is what I love. Like the whole glass shattering as he's walking by, like all the holy stuff just. It's like, yo, this is like a demon incarnate. You know what I mean? Like, this would make sense if like a demon or a devil would walk into a church. But what I like about it is that, I remember. I would not hear the end of this from religious people. And apparently this is why that scene probably would not work on this day and age. Because of the whole religious people. Bullcrap, censoring, whatever. Which actually brings up a question that I wanted to ask you. Okay. But let me talk about the scene first. It's the whole concept that he's in the church. Even my mother would tell me, like, there's no way he can go in the house of the Lord and blah blah blah.
Yeah, which is like cool because like there's tons of movies. Or like if we even cannot enter it, but Penna just rolls up in there, tearing down everything.
And I mean, I just told my mom, I'm like, it's not. I'm like, you know what? I believe, and this is a hot take on religion here. I believe Lucifer himself could walk into church.
I agree.
Why? He's evil. He's the devil. He's no good. He's still a fucking angel. Any way you put it, he's a fucking angel. It's like a dumb peel, which is a half human, half vampire. Why can he walk in the daylight? Because he's half human.
Yeah.
His blood is human. Because, I mean, on a dumb pill, if you hit him upside the head with a cross, you're still hurting him like you would a vampire. So Lucifer, the devil himself, does not fear the cross. That's my take and my opinion on that.
Oh, yeah, which can work for, like, Lucifer, but I guess people look like, well, like, the demons aren't angels.
Yeah, but whenever you see a certain devil or demon come into the play to go into a church, it's always one of the generals or a strong one. Like you look at like the devil mythology.
Yeah.
But those are usually the fallen angels as well.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say Pinhead is a fallen angel.
But Pinhead is also not a devil. He's from a different universe.
Yeah, I think that again, like I said, that I do like the fact that they didn't do the whole like you're safe thing that has happened in handful of movies.
Now, oh, okay, I think I feel like I have something in my, but him going into the church, doing the whole stabbing himself in the hands, like if he's, and does the gesture of being on the cross.
I am the way.
And then does says, I am the way, and finishes blowing up the rest of. And then, of course, that fake WWE table breaks in front of him. Do you think that in today's society, of course, not allowing that, how I'm kind of going with the same fact that if you can have that same poster behind you, use it for a past movie or whatever, and then you try to bring it up or do it again, but they say no because you can't do it because it's too offensive to whatever, well, then why is the scene still in the movie?
Well, I don't know for sure if you could not do a scene similar to this now. So I'm trying to think if there's a movie that has something like this.
Like where they do the cancel culture shit?
Well, yeah, but
Blazing Saddles is one. Blazing Saddles, the entire movie, is an example.
Yeah, but like I think it would definitely be tough to do in a mainstream film, like how Hellraiser 3 was. But you can like definitely do it in like a independent film. But independent films would be whatever.
Oh. Blazing Saddles was an expensive movie when it came out.
What's that?
Blazing Saddles was an expensive movie when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
But here, that's my thing though. Like, well, like I'm kind of agreeing with Dave Chappelle when it comes to this, and I think this also goes with the horror concept and aspect about it. People just want to bitch and complain about whatever they want to, but they use it for in like certain things. They don't take the whole concept or the whole conversation. They just get offended by the one line, the one sentence.
Yeah.
When there's an entire paragraph that's involved.
Yeah. I said, like, I'm, you know, there's a lot of things about cancel culture I just don't like. I don't like a lot of it, actually.
Censoring your titties, man. You love you some titties. They're censoring your titties.
It seems like those are getting like more and more leeway to, you know, compared to like other stuff. I don't know. You know, subject a lot there. But yeah, I don't agree with a lot of stuff.
So, all right. New Line sent, not New Line, Warner Brothers gave you an opportunity to do this movie. You're like, I want to do this, the church scene. They're like, no, you cannot do the church scene. But you're like, I'm going to do the church scene.
Well, then
you end up doing the church scene. It hits theaters and council culture attacks you. What do you do? What do you say?
That scene will probably not make the final cut.
Yeah, MPAA will probably take it out. But that goes to what I'm saying. Then how the hell are you going to keep it on the original cut and even distribute the original cut the way it is still and not take out the scene?
Because, again, there are films that have been edited.
Not this scene in this film.
But, again, like, I don't think this is as big of a deal. I just don't think it won't. It won't, per se, fly. But I think probably you could put it in a film. Like a mainstream film now, and people would complain. Because I mean, like again, back in the day, people had a lot of issues about Silent Night, Deadly Night. They made a big think about that. They, you know, that movie, though it did lose a lot of money, people can like protest. But it's not like it's out there that people have problems with.
They protested The Omen when it came out in 2006.
Yeah.
I remember going to theaters and having them people protest out there.
And like that Omen remake, I still have not seen it. Not that I refuse to see it, but basically saying it came out in like 2006 and I still haven't seen it. There's a reason why.
I mean, you've seen the original. You've seen that one. It's literally a take. It's like Psycho. It's a word-for-word remake.
All right, so let's get back to the film. So, after the whole church thing breaks down, Joey
runs... I'm not gonna lie. This is where I feel the movie takes another dive.
Joey like runs to this like random construction spot, and that's where like she finally meets. After like 45 minutes, we finally get to see the JP Cenobite. I don't know like his Cenobite name, but like every Cenobite always has a name. And then we also meet Harry's Cenobite. The actress hated the fact that she didn't have hair as a Cenobite, because she like admitted that like, she's kind of vain, and she's like, oh, can this thing at least have hair? You know. Then that's when you see, you know, like the camera one. Cameron one is like, no, JP's Cenobite is my least favorite. He's kind of dumb looking. But I love me some TD. And like, this is like when like Joey does it, which every Hellraiser movie has it whenever they're surrounded by Cenobite, opens up the box. They all go back in there. He thinks, okay.
Ghostbusters!
Yeah. Life is good. She goes back into this weird world, which weird, but she's sad there. She's like, oh, Dad, this is my reward for like saving the world. Why would she think that? I don't know. But this is what she thinks. And then her and her dad are having this little, whatever, quick heart to heart. And he's like, give me the box. Okay, here's the box, Dad. And then she's like, wait a minute. How do you know my name's Joey? And that's when it reveals that her dream, or like Pinhead, was posing as her dad. And ha, 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 double cross. But then Joey uses her weird limbo powers to conjure up Spencer and bring them to like Spencer's little hideout. Again, these, because like Leo's issue is this movie should have been like in multi parts. My issue, because I don't mind the fast pace to this movie. I just wish it was a bit more. You know, like, how is this limbo world working? You know, like,
and it would work if it had more parts.
Yeah, but like, I don't necessarily
need to tell a better story.
Like the other things, you know, stretched out. But, yeah, so like basically, at one time, Pinhead traps Joey up in like a almost like a dominatrix type setup, but and then like he's all Pinhead's like trying to Vince Spencer, like, hey man, you know you like this stuff, so come on, join me again, brother. Like, do this. So Spencer's like, yeah man, let's like get back together and be one whole person once again, you and me, brother. So they become like how Station One and like Station Two and like Bill and Ted do. They become one whole person again.
What was the name of that Macho Man, Hulk Hogan, the Mega Powers?
Yeah, so they're like one whole person, and it looks like, oh no, Joey's doomed. Pinhead is about to like kill her. For some weird reason in this scene, he decides to like use like one of his little carving knife things instead of just using chains, whatever. And Spencer comes through and tells her, what does he tell her? He's like, run or something like that. She gets the box again, and then like she kind of like transforms the box into the stabbing weapon, and she stabs Pinhead with it, and that kind of puts him back in his box. I don't think this is the last time we see the box becoming a weird stabbing weapon. And then we're back to the real world. Joey's still at that random construction site. She walks off and she sees a little wet cement section side to bury the box in there. She just puts her hand in, puts the box in, walks away, thinks everything's good in life. But then we see a little into the future. In that same spot, there is a building. And the building is filled with the puzzle box design throughout the entire building, which sets up the fourth movie. Being telling you there's going to be a number four.
That had nothing to do with that.
Good.
What? They're not a space.
Again, but the fourth one takes place in like multi-generations.
Yeah.
Like the part of the movie that like takes place in 1996, it's all about that building. Okay. You know, rewatch the fourth one.
You're gonna have to put it on the list. You're gonna have to put it on the list sometime for me to watch it now, because I'm not gonna lie. After the third one, I care not for the Hellraiser series. The only way I'm watching any other Hellraiser movie again is if you put it on the list to watch for future episodes.
I have like sometimes thought about doing Inferno as like a month of like underrated, underappreciated sequel month, you know?
All right, cool. January it is. I mean, what month we have next? November. So it's going to be, and I already picked my two movies. There's a Thanksgiving. Yeah. And then after that, there's the Christmas movies.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's the January plan.
Pretty good. Told you.
Yeah, because there's a handful of, in my opinion, underrated, underappreciated franchises, sequels that no one talks about. But yeah. Anything you want to tack on before we do the ratings here, Leo? Going over my notes because I forgot anything.
I mean, I like the film. I like what I like in the film, but what I hate in the film, Yeah. I can sit here and talk a bunch of shit about this film. But the scenes I like are stopping me from talking this shit. I can respect this movie enough to not talk shit about it for what I like. That's the only saving grace right now it has for me ripping this movie a new one.
Well, I guess for rating, as I like to do, I like to predict who has the lower rating and have them go first. So, Leo, what would you rate this movie?
6.5.
I thought you were going to go lower, actually. But
oh, no. It kind of goes like on the previous episode, the Chainsaw Massacre one. I was about to give that movie a 3. But after I found out how hard and the living hell they went through to make this movie, that movie possible, I respect it. So I give it what I get in this movie. If it wasn't for Pinhead blowing up a church, didn't blow up a church. If it wasn't for that church scene, damn, this movie would have suffered horribly.
I will give this movie quite an impressive 8. I just really, really enjoy this movie. This is my second favorite Hellraiser movie. Very just fun movie. Again, my explanation was like needed with the whole Joey talking to Spencer thing. A handful of times. See it again. I like watching it now too, actually. All right, and I'll go first with recommendation because it's recommendation time, and yeah. I will go with which I think is director Alan Hitchcock's first film, I think it was. Maybe I'm wrong. And it is the first Waxwork movie. It is more of a horror comedy. It's a very fun film. I like it. It has Zach the guy from Gremlins. I think it came out in 85 or 86, so like this was shortly after Gremlins. It's definitely a good movie. I've thought about doing it for this podcast before, but we've not done it. All right, Leo, what would you recommend another one?
Well, as you guys know, there is a female Pinhead lead coming out. I'd say, if you're not going to read an actual book, read the Hellraiser comic books, also written by Cliff Barker himself. I've had a hot take on the whole female, not a hot take, a real horror fan, a real Hellraiser fan, knows what I'm talking about. But people who are just like, it's not Pinhead, it's Pinhead's not a woman. Motherfucker, he wasn't even, Pinhead was not even in the book.
Yeah.
So, well, before you start bitching about something you don't know, quiet you. Yeah, that's what I say to those people.
The whole like female Pinhead thing, they've been talking about it for so long. Like, is it actually happening? I don't know.
No, it is. It's already been Hulu, and it's coming out on Hulu. It's already been confirmed. And what I find funny is that even in the comic book, it's a female.
Yeah. And it seemed like photos and like, well, like art, you know, pieces, like drawings and stuff like that. All right. Well, Mr. Leo, people find you at on the social media.
Oh, you can find me at XXLeoXRT2XX on Instagram. All
right. And as for me, you can find me at Nimrod Horror. I know that I've been kind of slacking on the Instagrams, but I think I'll go back on YouTube. I haven't posted.
Aren't you taking a break from Instagram due to the fact that everybody keeps posting up Halloween stuff?
That's just the weekend that Halloween movie came out because it was just overkill. But my last actual post was maybe 2 months ago, like my personal one. But and as for the entire podcast crew, you can find us at Nimrod Horror Podcast, one word, on the Instagram, Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe, like, comment, share on our YouTube page, youtube.com/Nimrod Horror Podcast. We'll get back to that pretty soon. There is lots of fun videos on there right now, so check it out. And, you know, next time, we got one of the really big boys. We're talking about J-Dog. We're talking about JV. We're talking about Mama's Boy.
We're talking about that Voorhees kid that drowned in the lake.
Yep.
Oh.
That guy who loves machetes. We're talking about the guy who apparently is a Detroit Red Wings fan that I just found out today about. What are we talking about? Friday the 13th, part 3. Next time, y'all. Until then, I'm Joey. Leo.
Chunk of the deuce.